sell books too, don't they? This week, Amazon and Barnes & Noble make news over which books they sell and which ones they won't. And a new entry in the science fiction genre finds Hurricane Katrina unleashing magical forces as well as meteorological ones. Welcome, everyone, to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series, Beyond the Book. My name is Christopher Keneally. Every week is our special Friday feature. We speak with the editors and reporters of Publishers Weekly to learn the latest news in publishing and to give you a sneak peek on what publishers, authors, agents, and librarians will be talking about all next week. Joining me from his office in New York City is Andrew Albany, PW's Features Editor. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey, Chris. Good to be here.
Tell us briefly what's coming up in the Monday issue.
Another packed issue on Monday. Our Rachel Deal has a story on bundling, which all the cool kids are doing these days. And Monday's issue will see the first entry from Tools of Change's Joe Weichert under a new partnership that Publishers Weekly and Tools of Change have started. He's written a column for us in anticipation of the TOC conference, and it's on DRM, I believe. And of course, as always, we'll have plenty of Amazon in the upcoming issue.
Right. Well, if it's Joe Weichert at O'Reilly Media talking about DRM, it won't be on DRM. It will be on anti-DRM or no DRM, but we'll look forward to seeing it. I think their position is pretty well known. So you mentioned Amazon. Its fourth quarter results came out this week.
That's right. And, you know, the company reported, you know, big gains in revenue for both the quarter and the year. But I'll just cut to the chase. No need to talk about, you know, their sales of flashlights and underwear, right? We'll get right to the good stuff. Its North American media segment, which is home to the company's book and ebook business, rose 8% in the fourth quarter. 8% sounds nice. I think for a lot of us, we'd like to have 8% growth, but that's only half as much as the 16% that it posted for the year. So Amazon attributes that to, I think, soft sales of video games, it said in a statement. And it did note that unit sales of print books in the quarter rose by double digits. So that's some good news, double-digit sales in print books. Double-digit rise in sales in print books. And also, the ebooks had a very strong growth. The division that includes the Kindle devices posted 51% fourth quarter increase and a 57% gain for 2011 overall. So you can check out more on that on publishersweekly.com. And in Monday's issue, I'm sure we'll have more on it as well. But let me throw in some more numbers that were interesting. Amazon reported 177% increase in Kindle unit sales during the holiday period, with the new Kindle Fire, of course, being its best-selling product. So, you know, it may be a little hard to quantify, but I'll say that those Kindle unit numbers from Amazon would seem to suggest that the Pew Foundation findings that we talked about last week are in the ballpark. You know, as you recall, Pew reported that the number of installed tablets or e-readers doubled to about 20% in the weeks right around the holidays, and that nearly one in three Americans now own a device of some kind. So however you slice the numbers between Amazon's, hey, take our word for it, figures and the Pew survey, I think it's fair to say that 2011 saw digital reading surge. And it's clear that the pace of that transition to digital reading with all these new devices in the market is only going to accelerate in 2012. And by the way, one other thing I'll mention is that Amazon has also said that it has over 80,000 titles now in the Kindle owner's lending library. And that seems like a pretty significant number. And as the year goes on, we'd love to have a chance to parse those numbers and see if they truly are spurring sales or denting sales, as publishers might think. But, you know, it's not going to happen. I doubt Amazon's going to let us see those numbers.
Well, in fact, all those rises in Kindles and so forth, they're without any accompanying data to go with the percentages. But the one that really does stand out is this rise in print sales, I guess by double digits, you said. So Amazon is still selling print books, which must be good news to publishers. But now they're in another turf war with an unlikely party over books and ebooks. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is the battle of the chains, I guess. Well, I guess Amazon's not a chain, it's an e-tailer. But yes, things are getting interesting around Amazon's publishing efforts. You know, ever since Amazon began expanding its publishing program a little more, Barnes & Noble has said that it would only carry the physical copies of Amazon-published titles in its stores if it also had access to the ebook editions. And, you know, Barnes & Noble even seemed to stand by that policy when Amazon announced its recent deal with Harcourt or Houghton Mifflin Harcourt to distribute Amazon publishing titles from its New York division under, I think it's called New Harvest, the imprint. But this week, BNN said in a statement that it has decided, I'm sure after much anguished decision-making, not to carry the Amazon books. BNN said the decision was based on Amazon's continued push for exclusivity with publishers, agents, and the authors they represent. They said that the exclusives that Amazon was insisting on would prohibit the chain from offering certain ebooks to their customers, and that they, quote unquote, undermine the industry as a whole and prevent millions of customers from having access to content. I mean, that's good stuff, right? I mean, I'm old enough to remember when the complaint was that Amazon was undermining the industry as a whole, and I'm not even that old. So I think it's right probably to be wary of Amazon's efforts to wall off its market. And, you know, it's clearly we're entering a very uneasy period here. But it seems like it's beginning to descend into madness, which brings me to another thing, which is the Authors Guild, which shared some observations on its blog this week.
Right, and that sound we hear in the background is pieces of something falling to the ground.
Yeah, you may want to get your umbrella to shield from pieces of falling sky. The post is titled, the Authors Guild post is titled, Publishing's Ecosystem on the Brink. And it's a jaunty little tale of disruption. It cites a few recent stories, a Bloomberg Businessweek story entitled Amazon Wants to Burn the Book Business. There's a Sunday New York Times business section piece called out. It's called The Bookstore's Last Stand. And there's a fascinating Harper's article, which I totally recommend, on the rise of new digital monopolies. So you can leave it to your imagination where this is all going. The post suggests, as you might guess, that the book business is facing a sort of perilous crossroads. And actually, I would urge listeners to go to the Authors Guild site and read the post and to read the comments as well, which are very interesting. And, you know, as internet comments I want to be, they're very entertaining as well. And, of course, I'll add my own observations as well. My first observation is that in 23 years in the book business as an editor, as an author, as a reporter, you know, when haven't we been in some kind of crisis mode? You know, it seems that we've been in a perpetual state of, you know, publishing ecosystem on the brink here. I remember back when former Pantheon publisher Andre Schifrin was making his stand against Random House back in the 90s. Now, I'm not saying that some of the hand-wringing about what these new tech-fueled businesses mean for the book business isn't justified, and I definitely share many of these concerns, particularly with the Amazons and the Apples' attempts to wall off their little corners of the book world. I think that is dangerous, and I think the AG is right to call attention to that. But I sort of resist the underlying notion in the post that the Big Six and Barnes & Noble must somehow form a wedge to defend literature and keep what's left of the book business viable. You know, in the information age, that strikes me as just a little counterintuitive. You know, at one point, the AG Post notes that it's new authors who are going to lose out if browsing in bookstores becomes a thing of the past. And I'm like, really? Are we really going to advocate that shelf space at chain stores is the issue in the age of the World Wide Web and social media? I mean, that position struck me as, you know, sort of fundamental reactionary misreading of where we're heading in the information age. You know, it struck me as more sentimental than reasoned. And the other thing that really came to me here about all of this was that the observations about Amazon's bullying behavior are well taken. And I hear a lot of horror stories about dealing with Amazon, usually in very hushed tones, with the teller of the story looking over both shoulders first. And yet, everyone, at least all the Big Six, are still doing business with Amazon. Publishers complain about Amazon. They get in these big fights with Amazon, but none of them are prepared to give up the sales, right? None of the Big Six has told Amazon, hey, this is too much, just take a walk. So frankly, it's a little hard for me to see this as a battle between publishing, quote unquote, and Amazon over books, as it's kind of been portrayed. You know, Amazon and publishers are in this business together. You know, if they're squabbling amongst themselves over how they're going to divvy up the book publishing pie, that's a different story. But publishers are not entirely powerless here, or are they? I think the more fundamental question that the AG might be asking is, when did the publishing business become a division of Amazon, and why?
Well, I hope maybe you'll answer that question for us sometime in the future, Andrew. It's a great one, and it's kind of an evolving answer as we follow it here on our special series with Publishers Weekly. Andrew Albanese, thank you for that. Let's turn now to Rose Fox, PW Reviews editor who blogs at Genreville. Rose, welcome back.
Thank you, Chris. Always good to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. You've got a special way to start your review of the reviews coming out on Monday.
I do. For the first time, but hopefully not the last, I'll be mentioning some noteworthy reviews that will go up in PW's online annex on Monday. Just like the magazine coming out on Monday, every Monday we also put up reviews online that we couldn't cover in the magazine for whatever reason, but certainly still felt were noteworthy. And a couple of the highlights this coming week, we have Laurie Andrews's I Know Who You Are and I Saw What You Did, Social Networks and the Death of Privacy, which offers a compelling social network constitution. And we also cover Gordon Grice's The Book of Deadly Animals. It's terribly fun and occasionally horrifying. Readers with camping trips on the calendars, beware. Moving on to the magazine itself, in fiction we have a boxed review of Tanya James's Aerograms and Other Stories, a new short collection of 9 stories mostly set in the southern India region of Kerala. And another fiction title is A Lady Cyclist's Guide to Kashgar by Suzanne Johnson. It's an engaging exploration of conflicting traditions shifting back and forth between 1920s Turkestan and present-day England. We cover former software designer Michael Olson's debut novel, Strange Flesh, which is a kinky and head-spinning literary thriller about cyber sex on the Lower East Side. We also have a Q&A with the author in this issue. And bestseller Christopher Moore returns to tweak art history with Sacre Bleu, which tangles the mysterious death of Vincent van Gogh with an enigmatic figure called the Color Man, who sold the titular ultramarine paint to van Gogh and other artists of his time, and he was intriguingly present during the most prolific, mad, and forgotten periods of their work. In Mysteries and Thrillers, we have Joseph Wambaugh's Harbor Nocturne, in which the Hollywood station crew, including surfer cops Flotsam and Jetsam, venture onto LA's San Pedro district, one of the world's busiest harbors. We also cover Afterwards, British author Rosamund Lupton's follow-up to Sister, in which a fire at a suburban London school takes on sinister overtones for one family confronted with malice and heartbreaking decisions. In science fiction, fantasy, and horror, we have the book you mentioned earlier, Suzanne Johnson's Royal Street. This is launching a new urban fantasy series set in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina destroys both the levees and some crucial magical barriers. And we also cover Walking the Clouds, edited by Grace Dillon. I'm very excited about this book. It's the first ever anthology of indigenous science fiction, and it collects science fiction from indigenous and Aboriginal and First Nations people from all over the world. It's just fantastic. In romance, we cover Untouched by Sarah Humphreys. This is the second in her Amovio series, and it features a half-human, half-shapeshifter who is on the run from shifters determined to keep their race pure and exterminate all the half-breeds. And in comics, we cover Untersachen, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, by Leila Korman, which is set in the Russian Jewish immigrant community of New York City's Lower East Side in the early 20th century.
Turning to nonfiction, tell us what we have coming out there.
Sure. We have The Undead, Organ Harvesting, The Ice Water Test, Beating Heart Cadavers, How Medicine is Blurring the Line Between Life and Death. That entire thing is the title of the book, and it's by Dick Teresi, who offers a scary and grimly humorous look at how doctors have redefined death and how that redefinition has been driven by the organ transplant industry. Also, noted scholar Alice Kaplan explores the formative role that Paris played in the lives of 3 very different but quintessentially American women in Dreaming in French, the Paris years of Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy, Susan Sontag, and Angela Davis. The Aleppo Codex by Maddie Freeman is a masterful account of a major religious document, which is considered the most accurate text of the Hebrew Bible, and he explores some mysteries around that, not only its origins, but also some political mysteries. And finally, we cover Paul Krivichek's Babylon, Mesopotamia, and the Birth of Civilization, which brings the ancient world to life, drawing on a number of primary sources. And the author is the head of Central Asian Affairs for the BBC World Service, so he knows his stuff.
You also have a review of a book by a chef I admire, actually, Mark Bittman.
Yeah, he updated How to Cook Everything, The Basics, first came out in 2003, and as the original edition, the new one will inspire confidence and optimism in even the most nervous novice cook. It has almost 200 recipes, 1,000 photos. It's a terrific resource.
Well, no one should be nervous when they're cooking. They should be having fun. And in children's, you've got reports on the great photoshopping scandal of 1920?
Yeah, in children's nonfiction, I hadn't even heard of this before I read the review of the book. Mary Lozier's The Fairy Ring tells young readers about the photo editing scandal that happened well before Photoshop in 1920, when Sir Arthur Conan Doyle published photographs that he believed proved the existence of fairies. So the book includes clear explanations of how the pictures were taken, showing children and fairies cavorting together in a garden, how cameras of the period worked, and it also adds the personal recollections of the people involved. We also have a roundup of 11 baseball books for fans of all ages, and we cover Kirsten Hubbard's young adult novel Wanderlove, which our reviewer says is rich with the unexpected joys and tribulations of new experiences. And finally, our pick of the week is Rites of Spring, that's W-R-I-T-E-S of Spring, edited by Gary Schultz and Pat Frobarp, and it's an inspired anthology of Minnesota and Wisconsin mystery stories to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Minneapolis mystery bookstore Once Upon a Crime.
Well, thank you, Rose Fox, with the review of reviews coming out this week in PW.
You're very welcome, as always.
And Andrew Albanese, always appreciate your participation in this special feature of Beyond the Book and the roundup of news from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other parts of the publishing industry.
Thanks, Chris. Happy to be here.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, copyright.com/beyondthebook. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.